and welcome back to The Movies Made Us Do It. Me and Matt are back. How are you, Matt?
I am pretty good, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah. Been watching films. We have the only two films I've watched, you've also watched this week.
Like, yeah.
This never happens.
No.
We at best synchronize on one film. This
usually
week,
fun, yeah.
Two films. So that's good. Yeah. Do you want to start? Where should we start?
Start with Dune.
Part 2. Yes, so Dune Part 2 has it's been out a little while now. I guess we're just catching up.
Yeah.
So this is obviously directed by Denis Villeneuve, starring Timothy Chalamet. Zendaya, does Zendaya have a last name? It's just Zendaya, right?
She probably does in
I'm
real
sure
life.
She does in real life, but like,
I don't, certainly don't
Zendaya.
Know it.
I don't know. I've never known anyone say, "Oh, Zendaya, blah blah blah." It's always Zendaya.
No. Be honest, I've never looked her up to see.
No, it's just whenever I see her name, it's always just Zendaya. It's like one name. Anyway, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Dave Bautista. There's a Skarsgård in there. You know, there's all sorts of people in this movie. A terrific, terrific cast.
Yeah.
And Christopher Walken shows up.
Oh,
but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I really loved the first part. You were not so keen, as I remember.
No. I think
you didn't hate it. I remember you didn't.
I think it's a beautifully crafted, wonderfully made, wonderfully acted, for the majority, movie. But for me, it just felt a bit lackluster. It didn't grab me like, and I think it's partially because I love the Lynch view so much.
Yes, yeah, you have a big love for the Lynch version. I too enjoy the Lynch version a lot, especially the Spice Diver version.
Mm, Spice Diver is definitely the best version.
It's very good. It's a very different thing. So obviously, this is following on. You know, from part one, we had the kind of destruction of House Atreides by House Harkonnen, and we basically have Paul and his mother now in the desert.
Yeah, I did like the way that it literally just picked straight up.
Yes, me too. I liked that it was like an immediate start. It wasn't, oh, you know, a year later or months later or something like that. It is truly a part two. You could watch them as one movie. So Paul and his mother are now with the Fremen. It is now up to Paul to kind of, well, depending on the version, use the Fremen to wage his war and get his revenge against House Harkonnen for killing his father and obviously decimating his people.
He is the last Atreides.
He is, yes, indeed. He is the last Atreides. This film, I loved the visuals of this film. I think this film is gorgeous. I think it's fantastically well directed. As always, I mean, I do feel that Denis Villeneuve is one of the best directors we've got, visually. I mean, everything he's made, I have thought, was very beautiful and very well shot, and I do feel that way here. I think some of, you know, he really does. I've come to realize, especially watching this film, didn't notice it so much with Blade Runner. I think because Blade Runner was one of those kind of movies anyway, but certainly in this, I'm coming to realize he just really likes visuals. Visual storytelling is his bag.
Yeah, I mean,
he's very good at it.
He made those slightly dumb statements, you know, when it was cut, when they were, you
remind
know,
remind me.
Oh, it was the statement about nobody watches movies for the dialogue.
Oh yes, and we both said we do. So
yeah.
I watch it for both.
Yeah, I was like, I'm quite a visual. I have visual movies really appeal to me, so I love things like massively beautiful. Mm-hmm. And he scratches that itch, but that's just not all movies are. I mean, some movies are just two people in a room, you know.
He's clearly never watched a Kevin Smith film. I mean,
exactly. And so
every Kevin Smith film.
It's all different thing. You can't really. I don't think you should make statements like that. But
no,
you
it's a silly statement. But
he meant it that way. But
I don't know
come
that
off
he
sounds a bit dumb.
Yeah, I don't know that he meant it that way, but I would say that certainly watching Dune and now Dune Part 2, it's becoming increasingly clear that he certainly prefers the visual kind of spectacle.
Yes.
Over...
I think that's evident in pretty much even, you know, what's the
Arrival?
The Mexican one?
Sicario?
Sicario, yes. Yeah. Even Sicario, it's that, and that's quite a heavy movie with some,
it is,
like,
yeah.
It's I mean, the scene where they're in the cars are all backed up.
Yeah.
And they're just waiting to be, basically to be murdered by those guys. You can see that they're like sat in the traffic, just waiting. That's a really beautifully visual
It is. Scene. He is, I genuinely think he is one of the best directors we have. And so, you know, we have the second part of Dune here. I loved the first part. I love this part. If I'm honest with you, I think overall, as a film, as a cinematic, you know, as a piece of cinema, part one and part two, I really loved. I really enjoyed it. I have some issues when it comes to my love of the book versus the films. And I think if I had... Well, the things are changed, and I don't mind things changing, necessarily. And I think some of the changes are kind of interesting. I quite liked seeing more of the Fremen, and there's, like, factions of Fremen and stuff. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was cool.
But I did feel like there are big bits of this book missing. There are characters missing.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of, on the one hand, I'm fine with it, because I think it worked as a narrative. I think it worked really well as a story. But on the other hand, you're kind of like, I'm tied. I'm really torn between my love of the visuals. And so, like, I'm watching it and I'm like, I love these visuals. They're amazing. And then on the other hand, there's like a part of me in the back of my head that's like, if we weren't spending so long on this visual, we could be having more plot.
you know,
and more of the story, more of the novel that I love. So I'm kind of torn there. But I think overall, for me, it's such a beautiful movie, and I think it's so well put together. If I personally had the biggest kind of the biggest weird thing to me was Christopher Walken, if I'm honest. And I'd heard that before I saw it, and I kind of brushed it to one side. But watching it, I literally text Ben when I was watching it on Sunday. I was like, "Oh wow, Christopher Walken's just in this movie, huh? Like there he is." He's not acting. He's just Christopher Walken there.
It's like when they.
I mean, he's not in it enough to like really ruin the movie or anything. But
it kind of, no, not to ruin the movie. But the weird thing is when they cast him, I thought, wow, what a brilliant presence to cast the Emperor.
Yeah,
but he just looks like this frail. I mean, maybe it was a decision.
It may have been.
He looks like this frail old guy who's just shuffling around doing nothing.
But he's also just acting like Christopher Walken. I didn't feel like he was playing a character.
It just seemed like a mildly peeved Christopher Walken who couldn't be bothered to do anything.
Yeah.
It's a very odd choice.
And conversely, I know that Florence Pugh has had a lot of criticism. Similar. I thought she was fine in this, personally. I didn't get that.
I didn't like the accent she was doing.
Okay, yeah.
She was doing like an American accent, which I just thought was a bit odd.
It did feel a bit out of place, I must admit.
Why aren't you just using your normal accent? It seems a little odd that you're doing this odd American accent. Because nobody else around her was doing... I mean, you know, Christopher Walken's Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
But no one else around her was doing sort of...
No.
American accents. It was a bit odd.
So where overall did you fall on this?
So, I completely agree with you with the visuals, except for the colour palette. I still think, you know, the colour palette of Lynch's Dune is just fabulous. Everything is beautiful. Everything is beautiful in a different, you know. And there's just no real colour in this. I mean, that sounds weird because there is colour in it, but...
I know what you mean.
To have seen a bit more... It feels quite hollow, this movie.
It is often like watching a film in sepia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even... I did like what they did with the infrared on... when they were on... Oh, what's the name of the Harkonnen place? When you've got asking. When they the gladiatorial games with Fade.
Yes, I
is the is it Giddy Prime?
Something like that.
Like, or is that the Emperor Homeworld? I can't remember. Anyway, the Harkonnen Homeworld, when they're there and they're because of the black sun, they're using that lens, the infrared.
Yeah.
That looked amazing. I mean, but it was black and white, so it was like I liked that. I liked Fade.
Oh yes, me too.
Don't think you my biggest problem with the Harkonnens is I don't think you ever really got a feel for them other than, oh, the Harkonnens are bad.
Well, that's kind of the thing, isn't it? It feels like almost a deliberate choice.
Mm.
They went, well, let's focus on the Fremen.
Yeah.
And the visuals of this movie and show less of Harkonnen. Because I do feel like you got enough of Atreides, I felt, in the first. I think there was enough to kind of introduce us to House Atreides and whatnot. But Harkonnen, yeah, they kind of turn up in the first one. And if you've read the books, you kind of know. But yeah, again, in part two, the Harkonnens take a backseat to everything.
Even the way they showed Rabban as being a bit of a coward.
Mm.
You still didn't get enough of a feeling for him. He feels a bit of a threat because it's Dave Bautista.
Because he's giant, yes.
Exactly, and he's a huge dude.
You had moments, like you had the moment when they had the attack and he was kind of cowering in the ship. You had brief moments, but yeah, I agree, not enough. There wasn't enough depth there, I don't think, with any of the Harkonnens, really.
No. And I know they have the whole Fufa plot done. They filmed the Fufa plot and completely cut it.
Well, and again, it comes back to that thought of mine that I just, you know, I'm watching these incredible visuals that go on for minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes, and they're beautiful.
Yeah.
But I do think I would have quite liked to have seen this, though. I would have quite liked to have seen that, though. You know, and maybe that's just me, like, you know, wanting too much. I don't know.
The other thing I disliked was, what did they do to Charney?
Very different from the book.
Yeah, they made, she was, I mean, I know why they did it. They wanted a voice for the a sort of voice of reason, if you like, a voice that says.
Well, I didn't think she came across like a voice of reason. She goes back and forth. She flip flops.
Yes, she does.
So now in the book,
they should have picked somebody else to do what she was doing.
Yes, an ancillary character could have done that. I felt like in the book, she knows goddamn well what's going on.
Yes,
like she knows exactly what's happening. She's basically using Paul as much as Paul's using them, right?
Yeah.
She knows exactly what the situation is. She's massively, you know, fiercely independent, smart person that's like, I know what I'm doing. I know you're taking advantage of us. I'm taking advantage of you. Fine. Yeah. It benefits us all. Whereas in this, she's like, on the one hand, she makes fun of him. Then she's in love with him. Then she hates him. And then she's like, what are you doing? Like, pick one. Like, it was odd, I must admit.
They obviously wanted her to be this, you know, the fierce woman that, you know, wanted to be independent and wanted to be the voice of reason, and
but I think she's so smart.
Character for it.
She's so smart and strong in the book anyway.
Yes,
that it was like you could have just done the book version and it would have been fine. And here she comes across like a bit of a moron to me. Like she flip flops too much. I'm like, what are you doing? You're almost bipolar with how you're dealing with all of this.
And I think she's the weak link on the acting front as well.
I like her performance. I'm not sure about the direction of the character, which I don't think was her. But personally, I didn't dislike her performance.
Maybe it was just because of the flip flop stuff. Mm-hmm. It just felt.
Yeah, it was weird. I'm glad you said that because I was thinking the same. It is odd.
And I mean, there's a lot to like.
Overall, I really loved this movie. Like, I think both parts.
I think they're good movies.
As a film.
That's the thing. At their core, I think they're visually stunning, good, well-made movies. They, for me, they just felt a bit lackluster, and I don't. me personally, I guess maybe because I'm just too attached to the Lynch movie, I just didn't feel it. It felt a little hollow at times, and I just
so yeah. So I feel almost bad saying this. Right, I will say now.
Mm.
I loved both movies as their own thing as a movie.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah,
but I have to say, and this probably sounds way more harsh than I mean it to sound.
Go on.
It feels like style over substance.
Yes.
In terms of like having read the book and knowing Dune.
Yeah.
And seeing which parts they picked, which parts they didn't, which parts they changed, which parts they didn't. It felt to me it was much more focused on the spectacle, the visuals, than it was the characters and the story.
And it kind of does ring what he said.
It kind of falls in line with what he said. Yeah, totally.
So, you know, it does make sense.
But now I feel like I'm bashing on the movie. I loved this movie. I loved the first one as well.
Mm.
I'm purely looking at it from the perspective of like, well, I can see what's missing.
Yeah,
and I would have liked a bit more of that.
I mean, they didn't even deal with the Weirding way.
No,
they sort of vaguely mention it,
but they barely mentioned the lack of technology either. Did they even mention it in part one? If they did, it's very briefly.
I think they might have, and I think they mentioned the Weirding way, and then they don't demonstrate it properly. Or there's one bit where Jessica, at the very beginning, where it looks like Jessica teleports.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's about to get done in and suddenly she's on the Dune. And my guess is that's because she used the Weirding way.
Mm.
She moved, obviously.
Yeah.
But they didn't explain that. She just seemed to teleport.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I kind of like the way that Villeneuve kind of just puts us in the universe and is just like, that's the universe. Mm. You know, in that you do see things and you're like, oh yeah, that's this, but he's never going to explain it or talk about it or mention it. We're just there and we see it in the background. Yeah. or you know, we're not going to go into the kind of detail. But on the other hand, it can be frustrating at times. So yeah, I'm kind of on the fence with a lot of this stuff, to be honest.
There's so many sort of things that it leaves out. I mean,
yeah.
And I mean, look, I it's a big book. It's a massive.
Oh god, I always thought it was unfilmable, to be honest.
Yeah, but they don't even do anything with the Spice Guild.
No, the spice is barely mentioned.
And even the spice. There's no real.
Mentioned.
I mean, they tell you what the spice is for. They tell you that it's.
Yes.
You know, he wants it. But you don't really ever get a feel for it. You don't.
No.
It doesn't seem to be. You know, that should be a big focus. You know, they should be going more into sort of that. And yeah, of course, they tell you what it does. They tell you that he's having visions and stuff. But it still didn't feel like it was doing it justice for me.
No. And I mean, even in part one, you see, like, a navigator briefly, right? And then it's kind of...
I was wondering, I can't remember whether you saw a navigator.
I think you see like an early stage navigator, right? But not...
Okay, I couldn't
but
remember.
And again, it's like, they don't mention it. It's just there.
No.
I think it just gets off a ship and it's like, okay.
I mean, there are whole characters that appear that they don't even name.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So you're like, does that person have a name?
But it's weird, isn't it? Because I can kind of enjoy it as just a movie of like, I've read the book, so I kind of know anyway, so it's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
But I do kind of feel like if I wasn't a fan of the book coming in, I'd probably want to know some of this stuff. You know?
One thing that does make me happy is I think there are certain people that this is their franchise. You know?
Oh, and it totally could be.
Star Wars.
I think
that makes me happy, actually, because I'm glad. I think they're still a good... I still think they're good movies.
Oh, I think I think both movies were tremendous. Overall, if I'm removing my love of the books and my want for everything of the books to be in the movie, which is not really possible.
No.
I love these as a story. I thought it was great. I think that they've told the story they needed to tell overall.
Yeah.
I think it sticks the landing. It tells the story. It's beautiful. It's purely just my love of the book and that I would like to have seen a bit more, you know.
I mean, on a visual level, one of my favourite scenes was just the scene of the Emperor's ship above the city.
Yeah.
And the fire coming off of the the ship and the just what a beautiful scene. I mean, you can't be dissatisfied with the visuals.
No, and I mean he is. It's one of the things I really love. Again, it feels contradictory to say this. I really think that one of the things I really love about this film is that he's so confident in his visuals and he lets the visuals breathe. He gives it time. If it was in any other context, I'd be like completely on board with it. It's just purely that occasionally while watching it, I was like, if we weren't spending 10 minutes on this one shot, we could be telling a story somewhere else, you know?
Yeah.
But no, overall, I loved both movies. I loved this movie. I don't know. I get the lackluster thing that you do.
I don't love them. I think they're good movies.
Yeah.
Would recommend them.
Absolutely.
But I personally, I don't think I'd ever watch them again.
Okay, I would. I would definitely watch them again.
I would. For me, I'd much rather just watch Lynch Dune.
Fair.
Because I know I'm going to enjoy that more.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would recommend it. I would say to people, you know, yeah. I mean, first of all, I'd say watch the Lynch one first. Even though that probably is a bit mean, just watch the Lynch one first. But I know, you know, people that hate the Lynch one. So.
Yeah.
But. You know, I would recommend them, but I would also say, you know, personally for me, they don't appeal to me as much as I would like.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah. So overall, I think I was right. I liked it more than you did. But I think we share similar issues here. It was more apparent in this part than the first one for me, personally. Yeah. But I loved it anyway. So
I must admit, I also, this is probably, shouldn't say, but I'm not a big fan of Timothée Chalamet either.
I've heard that. I liked him in the role. I thought he was fine.
I don't know. There's something about him I didn't find believable.
Fair enough. I didn't get that. I actually really liked him in the role. I've seen similar criticism of him elsewhere. So yeah.
I didn't hate him. I just thought. It's for a guy that's supposed to be, you know, that guy. I think Colin McCulkin does a much better job, but then, you know, as I said, I guess I'm just being biased. But, you know, there's something about Timothée Chalamet's portrayal of it. Just, I never got the feeling that this is a guy who has lost everything and is trying to build something new, despite the fact that, you know, it's going against what he believes.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly got some of the reluctance towards the end. You know, you can kind of see he doesn't want to necessarily use the Fremen, but kind of feels that he has to. I think they did get that aspect down, that he's using them and kind of occasionally feels bad that he's using them, but kind of has to.
Yeah.
Or feels that he has to accomplish his goal.
I will say... Josh Brolin, not Josh Brolin. Javier Bardem.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say Josh Brolin is in this.
Stilgar is the shining light in this movie.
Oh, he was amazing. Yeah,
he's so good.
Really, really good.
He's really good. I love the, you know, he's this fanatic that's trying to basically get everybody to believe what he believes, but he does it so well. And absolutely brilliant. I mean, and Austin Butler. For what he's given, did a very good job as Fade. I thought he was, you know, I did feel a bit like it was a case of every time someone mentions him, they say, "Oh, he's psychotic." It's like, okay, we get it, he's psychotic.
Yeah.
Can we see a bit more of that, please?
Yeah, could we see that?
And you can see it, but it just you still feel like it was more of a telling you psychotic. You're not getting enough.
Yeah,
play for him, you know what I mean?
Felt a little one-dimensional with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, overall, I feel like I've bashed on it now, but I loved both parts, to be honest. I did. Anyway.
I could recommend them as certainly a spectacle. I would say
as a visual treat.
The spectacle there, they're brilliant. But personally, I wouldn't watch them again.
Fair enough. Will you watch Dune Messiah?
Probably, yes.
Okay.
Because I think that's never been adapted,
so that would be fun to, you know.
Yeah, it hasn't put me off or anything. So I and especially if Villeneuve's still doing it. I mean,
I believe so.
I want to see what he does. Mm. But it would, you know, and I know he said he won't do a, despite the fact that I think they've got reams of footage of whole plots that they've not bothered with. Like I said, the whole Fufa thing, completely, you know. And he said that I have no plans on doing a director's cut.
I often...
It is what it is, so...
Yeah, I mean, I do quite respect a director that's like, no, that's the version, that's my version, happy, you know.
It's whether the film company will...
Well, yes, the film company may change their mind. And, I mean, to be honest, he may change his mind in later life. You know,
that's so true.
Ridley Scott was perfectly happy with versions of Alien, and then the 20th anniversary comes around, and it's like, oh, actually, you know, here's director's cut. So, yeah, we'll see.
Also, praising another character, actually.
Yeah.
I really liked Sheshkili, who was the other, who was Shani's friend.
Oh, yes, yes.
I thought she was great.
She was very good.
She was really good. She out-acted Zendaya.
Well, I think that would have been the better place for that role.
Yes.
To be honest, have her be that character. But, you know.
Yeah, considering, you know, the way she started as well, you know, having her as the constant voice of, no, we're Northerners, we don't believe in that shit.
Yeah.
I did like that, the whole Northern-Southern thing. I really liked
the Fremen factions. Yeah, I thought that was a really nice addition, actually.
That was very cool.
Yeah. But yes, anyway, that was Dune Part 2. What else have you watched?
So, I also watched Slaughterhouse.
Jesus Christ. Tell us all about Slaughterhouse.
Slaughterhouse, yeah. So it's been out for a bit, but I... basically, it was one of those sort of things. It was like $1.99 on Amazon, and I thought, you know what? I looked at the trailer, and I thought, that looks really dumb and fun, and hopefully all right. So we are introduced to Zeta House or something like that? We're introduced to this sorority house, where one of the characters, I think it's Brianna. She's the sort of the current president. And she's or of the sorority, and she's a real bitch. Everybody kind of hates her, but everybody loves her, sort of thing. And we've got Emily, who is the sort of the nerdy, the booky one. That this year she's determined that she's going to run for president. But she decides that the best way she can do that is to introduce a new mascot to the sorority house.
Uh-huh.
That mascot is a sloth.
Wow, I am so surprised.
Now, they established that the sloth is an evil little fuck from the start. I'm not spoiling anything. It literally starts off in the jungle with a lovely little sloth, and it's a full-on puppet sloth.
Excellent. A practical puppet. Nice.
It's practical sloth, and it's just the right side of naff. I really love the puppet. It was fantastic. He's there in his tree, and he gets gobbled by a crocodile. But then you see the crocodile, you know, it's got all these slash marks in it, and it comes up dead.
Of course it does.
And the sloth, you know, slowly comes back up onto the land. So it's then captured and brought to America, where, you know, it kills its cruel captor, as it were, and then gets picked up. Like, there were so many dumb move things in this movie, but they're supposed to be.
Well, yes. You know?
She just goes into this... She meets the guy at the mall, and the guy says, hey, how would you like a new pet? And she's like, no, thank you. And he's like, well, if you're interested, look at these lovely sloths. I've got this lovely sloth, and then like he goes off, gets killed by the sloth. She turns up at his house And the sloth is just sort of sat there in the middle of this room. And she's like, hello? Oh, there's the sloth. I'm just going to sort of like pick up the sloth because he's really cute. And then you see sort of a shadow of like some sort of big cat. She's like, okay, I'm going now. She just fucks off with the sloth.
Right.
Takes it to the sorority house. What one of the things I love about this movie the most, because it's just so naff, is that I think most of the actors in it are British. I think it's an American movie with mostly British actors filmed in somewhere like Serbia or somewhere like that.
Right.
And the house mother is played by Tiff Stevenson, who's a British stand-up. She's actually quite funny. And I was so surprised when she just turned. I was like, what the hell is Tiff Stevenson doing in a Hollywood movie? I mean, it's low budget, you know, hot Hollywood movie, I guess you could say. It's just it was so weird to me, but she's great as the house mother. But you find out it like towards the end of the movie, she's been there since like forever. There was a joke. I'm going to spoil this joke. There's a joke like she's basically dying, and she says, "I've been here all this time." I mean, this is like a late 40s year old woman. So I've been in this sorority house all this time, and my only dream was to be the president. Emily says to her, "Wow, was that the only reason why you're here? Was to be president? You're never going to be president." She's like, "I know that now. Maybe I should have used that degree I got." Basically, everybody loves this laugh. She becomes, she gets to, you know, become, but slowly I would say slow, it's not really slowly. It's actually quite fast. It just starts murdering all the sorority girls. Yeah. And no one notices. Everybody's like, hey, I haven't seen Brenda for like a couple of days. Anybody know where Brenda is? No? Okay, doesn't matter. And it just fucking, this is a sloth that knows how to work a computer and can drive. This movie, I mean, I know people will hate it. I absolutely loved it. It is so dumb and so brilliant and so just fun. I find it hilarious anyway. There's the thing I like most about this in comparison to something like Cocaine Bear is Cocaine Bear couldn't decide what it wanted to be. Cocaine Bear had this sort of whole thing where it was like, it wants to be a sort of slapstick, but then it wants to be sort of serious.
Yeah.
And then it wants to have these sort of, you know, these weird characters in it. But it also wants to concentrate on these weird drug things. And you're like, okay, no. Slaughterhouse just knows what it is.
It's knows exactly tonally what it is. Consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just says, this is a dumb movie with sorority girls and a sloth.
Which is what people are paying to see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have a little more gore at times, because sometimes some of the kills are sort of like, it's sort of, he towers over someone and then, you know, it cuts to the next kill.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, oh, that's me. But then there is a couple of ones that are quite gory. Well, not quite gory, they're just gory enough. But I think they could have probably chucked a few gallons of blood around a bit more. I think would have helped with the funnies. But this puppet is great. I think maybe there might be a couple of sort of computer altered faces and things.
Yeah.
But for the majority of it, it's basically a puppet sloth jumping around and slashing it sorority girls. I mean, the American accents are terrible.
Mm.
Some of the acting is really bad, but it just works because I genuinely think they just thought, this is what it is. This is the movie we've made. This is how we're doing. We know, but this is what you're going to get. And that is exactly what you get. I think, you know, it is literally a case of, you know, you only watch this movie if you think you're going to get a kick out of a puppet killing sorority girls, because that's all it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're gonna get, and that's exactly what you're gonna get. And for me, it was just a ball of fun. I really enjoyed it.
I'm not sure you would go into a movie called Slaughterhouse expecting anything less than that.
I think people do, though.
Yeah, I know.
You get reviews of movies where they just go, well, I didn't like it at all. It was very unrealistic. And yeah, like no, what shit. Are you watching? What? Yeah. You're not watching Citizen Kane. It's like, no. It's called Slaughterhouse. What?
Yeah, I always find it weird when people compare movies across genres like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, obviously Slaughterhouse is not trying to be Citizen Kane. It needs to be judged within its own genre. Mm-hmm. And within its own genre, it sounds like it did a better job at this than Cocaine Bear.
It did. It certainly did for me.
Yeah.
You know, Cocaine Bear had better actors in it and, you know, a bigger budget, I think.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed this way more than I enjoyed Cocaine Bear. It's just big old silly fun, and I really enjoyed it. The puppet is great. I guess the question you have to ask yourself is, would I be interested in watching a movie where a sloth goes onto the internet and looks at people's socials?
Yes, I would.
And also takes pictures of itself while it's killing people.
Yeah, why not?
And if that appeals to you, this is the movie for you, because it's just dumb fun, and it was really enjoyable. As I said, the puppet is just really just the right side of naff, I think. And I had a ball. I absolutely had a ball. It's yeah, just dumb fun. Watch it if that's your thing. I highly recommend it to anybody who just wants. I mean, my wife looked at the trailer and she went, "I'm not watching that." I was like, I didn't expect you to. I just wanted you to show you.
Yeah,
the
just
trailer.
Wanted to show you the trailer. Yeah, fair enough. I will probably watch this at some point. It seems like the kind of silliness I need occasionally. So
yeah, it is fun. And I was actually really, really impressed with Tiff Stevenson. I thought, wow, I don't think I've seen her in an actual proper acting role. I think I've seen her in things like TV shows as like a bit, a small part, but I thought she was really good as the house mother. And you know, most of the, I think some of the cast have been in like English soap operas and stuff. So I sort of vaguely know they exist. Sure. I don't think I've seen them in anything, but I know, you know, I'm aware of them,
mm-hmm.
but they all know what movie they're in. So it's great. Loved it.
Well, Slaughterhouse. We also both watched Late Night with the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
2023, kind of horror film.
Yeah.
I guess it is a horror film.
It is a horror movie.
It's one of those like horror movies that's not in any way remotely scary or even kind of trying to be, I don't think. That's kind of how I take it. It's a weird subset of horror movies where it's like horrific, I guess, in subject, and I guess you could argue some of the visuals, but it's not really even, to my mind, not even trying to be scary. It stars David Dashmal. I always mispronounce this name.
Dashmalchin?
Yeah, that'll do. We'll go with that. Laura Gordon, Ian Bliss. And so... I have mixed feelings about this one.
Mm.
So this film is basically framed as a documentary.
Yeah, it's basically set up as like in 1977.
Yeah, you get Michael Ironside kind of doing a voiceover, yeah. Very serious, like a Netflix documentary kind of style.
Yeah, and says, you know, this
Jack Delroy.
Yeah, this host who was, you know, second only to
Johnny Carson. Yeah, he's competing with Johnny Carson with his show called Night Owls.
Yeah, and you know, he had this great career and stuff, and he had this lovely wife,
adoring wife. Sort of, yeah,
and then there's like this incident happened on his show in 1977 that, like, you know, shocked people and everywhere and all that sort of stuff, and this is the footage from that night. And
yeah, it's a really fun setup.
Yeah, and it's basically, it says this is the show as it was filmed, with also like the between you know, the between bits that were, you know, yes, while the cameras were on. So you, yeah, it kind of sets it up as you know, you're watching what happened, what went out that night in a sort of
ghost watchy kind of way.
Ghost watch kind of way, yeah. That whole sort of, you know, live television event that you know went wrong.
Yeah.
So he's great.
Right. So yes. So I think the performances are great. Really enjoyed the movie. I think I love the idea of this movie more than I like the movie.
Right.
I really find the fact that I like that they were like, this is a doc. It's like effectively a found footage movie, but if it was a TV show that was filmed, so the footage they have is the TV show. I love that concept. I really struggled at times with I wish they'd actually made it look like it was actually filmed in the 70s.
I thought they did a good job with the look.
Well, I thought it was really kind of, all they did was change the aspect ratio and barely did any, like, I would have liked a bit of like VHS damage, a little bit of noise, a little
I'll go with you on that. They, other than when they were sort of, you know, and things flickering on purpose.
Yeah. And I also felt like some of the camera angles were like, well, if this was filmed, what, how did, you know, do you know what I mean? It's like, what, so they were filming this as well? And like the backstage stuff was very convenient and everyone's so, like, microphoned up and sounded perfect.
That's
and like,
what I didn't, one of the things I didn't like was the between things.
But it's a great idea to have that, but.
But what they should have done, I mean, what I think they should have done was not have the cameras focused.
That would be much better.
So you're just picking up the sound. Yeah. And occasionally, maybe the camera will pan across.
Which found footage does very well. I don't know why, because they could have done the in-show bits are fine in the way they're filmed. I would have added more noise to it to make it look a little more like a 70s thing production. Yeah. But the backstage stuff should totally be like found footage. You know, it's handheld. And those cameras are big handheld cameras back then as well. So, you know.
Well, they weren't handheld. They're huge fucking monsters, aren't they? They're
yeah, but they are hand holding them backstage, aren't they? There's a shot of one of them holding it camera later.
Oh
on.
Yeah, you're right.
But
yes.
they're big things. They're not easy to handle. So they should be really kind of out of focus, awkward shots. You know, maybe off camera shots, and you're just kind of
hearing
stuff.
Think there should have been whole bits
so much
where
better.
You're just picking up the sound. I think you know, like conversations between him and his manager.
Yeah,
I don't think you should have ever actually seen them. You should have just heard those.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe the camera just goes past it, you know, you just pick them up on a, because it felt very like you're watching a movie in those bits.
Yes, it did. And it kind of took me out, if I'm honest.
They're telling you it is.
Yeah. But I think that aside, and some very dodgy CG effects towards the end aside, I really enjoyed a lot of this movie. I really like, I'm a fan of that mockumentary kind of style.
Yeah.
And I really like 70s kind of talk show stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really like supernatural stuff. And I thought it brought everything together really well. I really loved, who's the guy?
Ian Bliss,
the skeptic.
Yeah, the
he
guy
was
who
great.
Was basically, he was basically the Amazing Randy, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah, yeah, effectively he's the Amazing Randy. He was great.
Ian Bliss is Carmichael Haig.
Yeah.
He was wonderful.
Superb.
He was so good. He was such an asshole.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was so good. I love some of the bits that he does were just really funny. And you're like, yep, okay, I get this character.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the girl playing Lily, Ingrid Torelli, she was good. It's, you know, what she was doing.
I will say as well, just very briefly on the skeptic character. There was a bit, and I was like, this actually works really well, where it's minor spoiler. He basically does a trick on camera.
Yes.
And he basically hypnotizes everyone.
Yes.
And what I like about it is like, well, this wouldn't work for found footage because we're seeing that there's like worms coming out of his stomach and stuff. And it's like, no, but he's hypnotized you as well. So it kind of works on like, oh, he's actually hypnotized you as well. And then later they look back at the footage and that didn't happen. That was a really nice touch. I actually really liked that.
That was kind of cool. Yeah, I did like that. But then the problem is they set that up.
Yeah.
And then when it gets to the end, I mean, I'm trying not to spoil anything.
I thought the end kind of jumped the shark a bit, if I'm honest.
Yes. I don't think it worked for the end.
No, I agree.
I do like... I don't want to spoil it too much, but like the visual of what
happens.
Let's say
it was a bit over the top myself.
What happens with Lily, I love that visual, was awesome, I thought.
I think it would have looked better if they'd noised it up a bit. Again, it would have hidden, because it looks kind of cheapy CG in places.
Yeah.
And I think if you had like a bit more of the like, oh, the tape got chewed here, it would have probably looked quite creepy.
Yeah.
But I did like, I liked the concept. Yeah. I'm trying to dance around what it looks
like.
Yes,
they were.
It is cool. I agree.
Yeah. And I mean, I love the whole sort of all the stuff, you know, the secret society. With
the
guy,
The Grove?
Yeah, the Grove. And with the guy who was basically...
Because they kind of insinuate that that's why his wife died, right? They're like, that was the payoff, that he managed to save his career by selling his soul or something to this cult. And as a result, his wife got cancer and whatever. And it was an interesting setup for...
And all that stuff was really good. The whole sort of like, you know, him bringing his wife on the show when she was dying and, you know, that the... You know, that the bit with the sidekick and stuff. Mm. I liked that. That was all really good.
Yeah, I really liked
it. You know, all the guest characters, like, you know, like him and the guy who was basically, I forget the name of the bloody psychic he was basically being, but he was really cool. The what's the name? Christo.
Oh yeah. He's great. The projectile vomiting.
The funny thing is, you could see. The people they were supposed to be. The guy who was Xandor.
Uri Geller.
Yeah, he was so Uri Geller in a lot of the stuff he was doing.
Even say to him at one point about bending spoons?
Xandor was so clearly Anton Randy. LaVey.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant
Xandor, who you only see in the sort of clips, isn't it, of when they give you Lily's story and what happened to her and the cult that she was part of. You can see the sort of the influences all over the place, and I like that. It was very, I thought that was well done. I did enjoy the movie.
I really enjoyed it. I just felt like I think it was good. And I think with a couple of tweaks it could have been great. That's kind of how I see it. I definitely recommend it. Absolutely. I had a blast watching it.
The main problem it has is that it sets itself up as one thing, but then...
turns into something else. Because it sets itself up as this kind of documentary thing, which I was really down for.
Yeah.
And they drop it in the final 10 minutes or so. It's completely gone. The found footage thing's gone now. That's not a thing. And that's not necessarily a problem, but certainly leading up to that. I think I could have lived with the stuff in camera on the show if the backstage stuff had been a bit more found footagey, you know, less perfect. Overall I had an absolute blast with this. I thought all of the actors involved were great, and like you said, having been a fan of James Randi, And I have like an unhealthy interest in these kind of charlatans and stuff. I've watched so many of James Randi's like debunks of these people, like live, because he used to, I mean, I think that's what the inspiration was, right? Because he did this before. He actually did this. I thought it played off that really well. I thought all of the cast, especially David, is so good. I mean, he's good. Yeah. We've said this before. He really does deserve more starring roles and bigger work.
I hope so.
It's quite it seems to be getting really good reviews, this one, so hopefully. I thought it was a really charming, fun movie.
I think the main two of him and Ian Bliss.
Yeah.
Those two were, their performances were wonderful. Just perfect.
Yeah.
Really fucking good. And I did like the guy who was playing Gus as well. Is it?
Oh, he is. Yeah. The kind of, I guess, assistant.
Yeah. I do like the fact that he's kind of the only one who's walking around going, I don't like this.
What the fuck are we doing?
It's really unchristian. I don't like it. He's quite a sweet little guy. I really liked his character. And you know, what Rand, I'm going to keep calling him Randy.
Well, he basically is Randy. Carmichael,
yeah. What Carmichael does to him is actually really funny.
Yeah, because he's like the most innocent of all of them.
Yeah.
And he's like, pick on Jack or someone. Don't pick on him. Like, Gus is the nice guy.
Totally why they pick on him. It's great. I love that. It was funny. But yeah, it's really quite well made. It's you know, other than some of the ropey effects, I know it's getting shit because break. We're going to a commercial break. The boards for that were done on AI, and it's getting shit for that. And it's like,
does that matter?
Does it matter?
They didn't film the whole fucking thing in AI.
No,
like,
it's just a couple of.
No, I think there's I would right. So if they just fed the script, if the script was written by AI and then the whole fucking thing was just generated by AI, I'd agree. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of artistry that's gone into this film. There's a lot of well thought out dialogue. There's a interesting character arcs. There's great shots, cinematography. I mean, like I said, I would have liked to have had it a bit more noisy. But that's just a personal choice. It's really well filmed. To just be like, oh, they used some AI still, so fuck them.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a little harsh. I think there's a lot of artistry in this film, and there's some superb, you know, acting. I didn't even realize, actually. So which parts? So the is it
so
just
it's,
the?
It's literally just the
owl.
The boards, the owls.
Yeah, the we'll be right back stuff.
Yeah, the owls and the skeletons were done on with AI art.
Who cares?
And it's like,
that's such a tiny part.
Really,
of the
really
movie.
Against AI art. I'm an artist. I like, I paint, I draw, but I have no problem with AI art.
I think if it's used well,
it's a tool that can help people. It's fine.
It's not lazy here.
No.
It's not like they've made the whole bloody movie with AI. Like,
it's just some tiny pictures.
Yeah.
So, I guess some people are just like, oh, it's not the spirit of 1977, is it? It's like, well.
Well, neither is a lot of this film, but that's not really the point.
I think that's just.
I mean, if I was going to be that anal about it, I would have been like, well, they should have shot it on, like, high grade VHS and done it, you know, or like real, done it reel to reel, you know, like film it properly.
Proper polyester suits.
No, I thought this was a gem of a movie overall.
Yeah.
Like I said, I just felt like it could have been something spectacular if they just changed a couple of things, but overall I really enjoyed it.
It's one I'd recommend.
There's a
lovely little sort of like you said, it's not a horror movie in the horror movie sort of.
Yeah, there are horror moments. I watch a lot of horror movies. That's probably unfair to say it's not a horror movie, but it's one of those. I feel
it's
like
what
sometimes
we talk about all the time about the whole thing about jump scares and things. It's a horror movie in the themes, horror themes.
I would say it's a mockumentary with horror themes.
Yeah.
And maybe the very end, I guess you could argue. But, like, it's not a jump scare movie and it's not a psychological horror movie. There's no real attempt to scare you in this movie.
No.
What it is this interesting situation.
Although, I suppose if it was a real thing in the 70s, it certainly would have probably got people. You know what I mean? Like, in the sort of Ghost Watch type thing, if it was...
Ghost Watch got a lot of people, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So... Certainly in 77, it would have got a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially given that CGI wasn't even a thing back then. If this all that, totally, like, mind blown. But, yeah, overall, I really enjoyed Late Night with the Devil. Highly, highly recommend it. So, what else have you watched?
So, I also watched the... I was going to say the. It's not the. It's just Dream Scenario.
Uh-huh.
So this has been, again, it's another one that's been out for a bit, but I finally got around to catching it. It's Nick Cage and Julianne Nicholson.
Yeah.
We've got Tim Meadows. And it's basically directed by Christoph Borgli. So it's basically this. So we've got Nick Cage's Paul Matthews, who is a professor at this university, and he deals with evolution and so that sort of a whole sort of what's the word I'm looking for? The
science.
Yes. the Darwin, the whole Darwin evolution source, and stuff like that. And he's a very dull man. He's got a lovely wife and two girls.
Now that is acting.
You know, he's
Nicolas Cage trying to act dull. That's a hard job for Nick Cage.
I think that's why they picked him.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great contrast.
That's why they picked him, and he does a wonderful job.
Oh, I'm sure he does. I'm sure.
I mean, his whole posture, and they give him a slightly false nose, and
he's such a great. He really throws himself into every role.
Yeah, he does. I love that. Completely method. That's how he likes to do it. And he's this this really dull guy, and you see him going through this lecture about zebras and how zebras' stripes work as camouflage, and that they use their camouflage as the herd. So it's their stripes only work because they are in this big collection of things. But the moment one of them comes out of that, the protection of the herd, that's when they get eaten. Right, so he's that's how he's explaining this sort of thing, which is very relevant to the story. So he also has this thing where he at some point when he was, I think it was at college, he had this theory about ants and how ant hive minds work, and he had this idea for this book, and he never wrote it. So he never wrote this book, but one of his sort of the people that he was at college with, she's just written this book, which is basically what his idea was.
Right.
So you see him going to this woman and trying to say, look, this is my idea. Are you going to give me credit? And I think, and he's, his wife says, oh, you're going to kick her ass. You're going to, you're going to talk to her, and you're going to make her apologize, and you're going to make her do this. And of course he does none of those things. He does confront her, but it's very lackluster, and it doesn't go the way he wants it. And, she says, well, you had this idea like 20 years ago. Why haven't you written the book yourself? I can't help it that you had this idea 20 years ago, and now we've got this idea and we've worked on it. And, you've fully established this guy as this complete, loser, really.
Yeah.
And then people start dreaming about him.
Uh-huh.
He starts just turning up in random people's dreams. Like there's a bunch of people at a dinner party, and it's like, oh, I keep having this dream about this guy. This guy, he doesn't do anything. I'm dreaming about something. Something's happening, and then he walks in, and he doesn't do anything. He just stands there and looks around, and then he walks off. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. I had a very similar dream like this. Because we had this dream about this person we know, and yeah, because what does he look like? He's like, well, here, I've got a picture of him. He's like, that's him. So all these people, two of his students have dreams about him. So he sort of goes into the next lecture, and they're sort of giggling, and it's like, what are you talking about? Why are you thinking?
Mm.
All of a sudden, he's got internet fame. People are talking about him. He's like, wow, people are lying about him turning up in their dreams.
He's become the creepypasta. There was a I think it was a viral campaign, wasn't it?
Yes.
They made up.
It was.
This guy's face kept turning up in everyone's dreams. So it's basically that, but
yes.
It happens to him for real. Yeah.
So you get this whole sort of fame angle. You get this whole sort of, you know, is it deserved fame or undeserved fame, or you know, and you know, this advertising company comes to him and says, you know, oh, we think that, you know, you could, you know, advertise Sprite in people's heads. Be great.
Yeah, that's amazing. You could advertise to people while they're asleep.
Yeah, exactly. And for him, he like, oh no, I just thought this would be good because I've got a book. I, you know, oh, you've wrote the book. He's like, well, no, I haven't written the book. So, well, you know, that's all you know, really interesting. We're, you know, we're really interested in that. But we think, you know, we could even get Obama to be involved. And then, and he's like, Obama? And they, you know, they're telling him these like fucking things, and he's like, kind of eating it up. And you know, I'm not going to go into, you know, too many spoilers, but obviously it then takes a turn, which I wasn't expecting, actually. It then becomes like a cancel culture thing.
Oh, okay.
Because from there it moves on to, he starts hurting people in their dreams.
Oh, God.
So
then he's getting blamed for hurting people.
Exactly.
Right, so okay.
He's, you know, there's like, he attacks one of the students with a hammer, and or he strangles another student. And of course, they're all like, well, I don't feel safe around him. And then it's the whole sort of perceived trauma thing. And it's like, oh, and you get, it gets into a whole sort of cancel culture thing. It's like, wow, this, I was not expecting it to go here. But it also, it's actually quite a complicated movie, because it's telling you all sorts of stuff. It's going all through the sort of, you know, fame and the you know, stuff you think you deserve, entitlement. You know, it goes into the whole entitlement thing, because he's, you know, he, even though he's a complete loser, he has this sort of entitlement that he thinks he should be better than he is. You know, he should be known for as this a great guy who wrote this amazing book, but he's never bloody written it. So he has this entitlement that you know, is undeserved.
Yeah,
and it goes on through all these sort of like these little things. It goes to cancel culture, and it goes to fame, and it goes to actual just dreams and how your head works, and how, I mean, it doesn't obviously go into full details, but it has this weird dream logic. And there's a bit towards the end, it gets into this sort of thing where this company comes up with a device that allows you to go into people's dreams if they let you.
Right.
And you can, and then it becomes a sort of weird sort of thing about advertising and influencers and all that sort of stuff. So it's got a lot of stuff in it. Really, you know, big sort of quite heavy stuff, really. And again, it's Nick Cage doing absolutely wonderful work, because his character just goes from this sort of quite sort of depressingly miserable guy, you know, just depressingly sort of sad loser, to being this sort of massively famous, huge, like, name, and then to being this fucking pariah. You know, they're like, you know, people are beating him up and vandalizing his car, and you know, it's this whole, it's quite the arc he goes on, you know, and you know, I'm not going to spoil it, but how he ends up in the end. And I think people have been disappointed with the end. And I thought it was kind of a perfect end for it, because I think it doesn't have a sort of a conclusion of, this is the conclusion, this is how they feel. It has a sort of, no, this exists, and maybe we don't know how to finish it, because we don't know how life is going to turn out. You know what I mean? I think it has that. It has an ending, which some people have seen it as a happy ending. Some people have seen it as a miserable ending. I'm not sure it's either of those things. It's a sort of, I can't say I was 100% satisfied with it, but I see it as an ending that works because of the way it does, because of what happens. And And I'm not going to explain what happens. But I could see why people would be very upset with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Cage is wonderful. It's a very complicated movie to discuss, because I think it will upset people, and I think it will, you know, I think people will get on, will latch on to certain bits of it. So, you know, some people will completely latch on to nothing but the cancel culture stuff. Some people will latch on to just the fame stuff and the,
yeah,
the, you know, it does feel very, it does sort of pick a side, really. It does feel very anti sort of influencer and,
right.
You know, I think it does show that cancel culture is bad. Of course, cancel fucking culture is bad. We all know that cancel culture is bad. But I think it deals with it in an interesting way that I really enjoyed. If you can enjoy this movie, it's not a movie that you're going to watch and go, oh yeah, that was a really sort of,
that was a rip roaring fun time.
Yeah, it's not a rip roaring fun time. But it is a really interesting, brilliantly acted movie. And it will make you think about stuff, and it will, you know, confront stuff about, you know, are you doing enough? Have you done enough in your life? Do you deserve what you have in your life? You know, are you listening to, you know, are you? You know, it's the whole herd thing, the whole thing about the zebras and you know, are you safe in your little bubble keeping because that's the way it is? Or, you know, do you want to sort of be like that? Do you want to be the one that goes out and puts their face out there and get murdered, as it were? But I really did enjoy it. It's a very, it's one of those ones that, I watched it with my wife and she absolutely hated it.
Oh no. That happens quite a lot with you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
One of you ends up having a bad time when you're watching a movie.
Yeah, she really hated it. And I think it is going to be one of those movies where it's going to divide opinion because of,
yeah,
you know, it's how you fall on certain things and how, you know, whether how you feel about his character and whether it's a certain things that happen are selfish or whether certain things are justified. It's a very, very interesting movie. I think, you know, do not watch this movie if you just want to have a, you know, I'm just watching a movie to be entertained. This is not a movie you watch to be entertained. This is a movie you watch, you know, to have a bit of a think and a bit of a sort of, you know, if you want to see something interesting and, you know, I won't say out there because some of the dream stuff isn't, you know, like really, really like Lynch dream stuff.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it does have its moments of sort of weirdness some of them is quite fun, but yeah, it has those moments of weirdness that is really not going to appeal to a lot of people. So, It's a hard movie to you know, recommend to people. I would recommend it to certain people, but I think a lot of people will struggle because it's not an average, I'm going to switch off and watch a movie.
Sure.
Well, but I really liked it. I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I will more than likely watch it because, you know, it's Nick Cage. And I kind of like, it's kind of an interesting story as well, actually. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the trailer does a pretty good job of showing you what it is. But some of the twists, you go, oh, I didn't expect that. I certainly didn't from the trailer. So it's a very interesting movie, and Cage is wonderful in it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think most movies recently Cage has been wonderful in, that, you know, that he's done, even that Retirement Plan, he was good in it. It's just, it was a terrible movie.
Yeah. And I liked, I quite enjoyed Sympathy for the Devil or whatever it was called.
So I haven't seen that one yet.
That was fun. Yeah. It was good. It was good fun.
It's good at that. So,
yeah. Well, that, I believe, is it for all of the movies that we've watched this week. We should mention Bernard Hill passed away yesterday, day before yesterday. Of Titanic fame, Lord of the Rings fame. Yeah, great actor.
I was a kid when Boys from the Black Stuff came out. Uh-huh. So I've known him since then, since being a kid.
Oh, I've known him since before Titanic. It's just like, that's what he's most famous for, is those two movies.
Did you ever see Boys from the Black Stuff?
Yes, a long time ago.
It's such a depressingly great movie series.
Yeah.
It's so good, and his character, Yossa Hughes, is so tragic. He's such an amazing character, and he's such a great presence in that series. It's a series I would recommend, but it's a bleak watch.
Sure.
You know, it's about unemployment in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's a really good series, and he was a wonderful part of that. But yeah, I mean, I think the outpouring of love for mostly for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
King Theoden. I mean, he did a spectacular job as Theoden.
He really did. I thought he did a very good job in Titanic as well as the captain. I thought it was a fine performance, you know. He's always been a solid actor in everything he's been in. One of those actors, you know, if he's going to be in it, even if it's a terrible movie.
Yep.
Scorpion King. you know, he'll still be good in it. He'll still give a great performance, you know, for the role he's given.
Yeah. And so many, you know, the voice of so many adverts and documentaries.
Yes, yes.
He had that amazing voice as well. So, yeah, he will be sorely missed.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to cover before we disappear?
Just things that piqued my interest. One thing I literally saw just before we came in.
Right.
Mike Flanagan is up for directing the next Exorcist movie.
Well,
it talks to the Exorcist Deceiver. Now that's I for me, that's slightly disappointing. Because
he might
what I've heard
it.
Of the last Exorcist movie.
Oh, it was fucking awful.
Yeah. It's like,
but he might do a good job.
Well, the thing is that
it's a bit late now, but
I trust him to do a good job.
I would say, like, if you're gonna get Flanagan to do it, I'd be like, just start again.
Yeah.
We're starting again with this incredible director.
Yeah.
And go. You know? Like, I wouldn't be... Don't make it a bloody sequel to Believer. That was terrible.
No.
Make it a sequel... I don't know. I guess if you're going to do a sequel, make it a sequel to 1 and 3 and just, like, ignore Believer. Which is kind of what Believer was trying to do anyway, but yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Rough. Yeah, I don't know about that. I hear the Omen prequel's okay. I've heard. I haven't seen it.
I've heard mixed, but positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea is a bit weird because we know who Damien's mother
was. I am told by my friend it does make sense and work.
So okay.
That's what my friend said. I can't swear that that's the case. I am told that it does. It's not like they haven't retconned it.
Okay.
So, yeah, I hear generally good things about that. But, yeah, God, that Exorcist Believer was terrible.
Yeah. And, and then I did see that literally before we started recording was the Vin Diesel's going to be doing another Riddick movie.
I wanted to surprise you with that. Because Matt loved the last Riddick movie.
Oh, man, that last one was so appalling.
You should have heard Matt talk about the last Riddick movie.
That movie.
I know. It was terrible. In fairness, it was terrible. And it's one of those movies where you forget and you're like, oh yeah. Like Dave Bautista was in that movie. And like he was awful in that movie. And at the time we just thought, oh well, he's just a wrestler, he's not very good at acting. Yep. But it turns out it was just the script. He's actually a very accomplished actor.
Oh, all of the stuff with Katie Sackhoff and that was just,
again, amazing talent.
Yep.
What are you doing? God, so bad.
I went with my
and
wife.
And the speeder bikes, the effects look so bad.
I went with my brother, my wife and my brother-in-law to see that movie. And it's been the closest I've ever come to walking out of a movie. I I came so close, and I think it was, if it wasn't for the fact that I was with them, I might have got up and gone. I just, there was something about that movie that I just hated.
You were that's probably the one of the angriest I've seen you talking about a movie, actually, that movie. Yeah. Like, I guess movies that have annoyed you more in terms of their substance, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's the most angry I've seen you at a movie that was just rubbish.
Yes.
Like, it really enraged you that it was so incompetent.
Yeah. And I love the other two. I love Pitch Black, and I like the Chronicles of Riddick.
I'm not such a fan of Chronicles of Riddick. I do love Pitch Black, though. I think Pitch Black is a fine movie.
Yeah, Pitch Black is. Let's not mix words. Pitch Black is a great movie. Riddick is.
It's not, good movie. But it has. yeah, sure.
I think it's a good movie that has massive flaws. But overall, I really like a lot of the stuff in that movie.
Also, I need to look it up because I can't remember what it's called now. But doesn't this one have an equally retarded name? Furia. Because he's a Furian, right?
Yes.
Which is the dumbest name for a race ever. So he has to have... So everything's going to be called Furia.
Furia.
Is that the name of the homeworld?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's the name of the homeworld, okay. Wouldn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's slightly unfortunate, you know, you've got Furiosa coming out soon.
Yeah, it is a little. Are they going to convince Dame Judi Dench to turn up in this one?
Oh, I doubt it very much. Not. I mean, I love the stories about him trying to get Judi Dench to do his movie, that like just sending her loads of flowers and you know, turning up like, you know, hey, would you want like this? Like, yeah, why the fuck not? Sure, I'll be in your weird movie.
Why not? Yeah, so that's happening.
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
Yes, there was one more that. I mean, this one could just be written for me.
Okay.
So, Mandy director,
I'm on board. Thanos
Cosmatos.
Uh huh.
He's cast. Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac in a 80s set vampire movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that Flesh of the Gods I'm seeing here? Or Necrocosm? The next two films that he's got coming up.
I don't know. It doesn't. I don't think it says what the...
That was Wikipedia. That could just be made up.
Oh, Flesh of the Gods.
Yeah,
yes.
Flesh of the Gods, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's going to be called Flesh of the Gods. So, yeah, it's about LA in the 80s.
Mm.
So, that's perfect.
I mean, that is pretty much your thing.
Exactly, yeah. 80s vampires with Panos Cosmatos, who, I mean, Mandy was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my movie of the year that year that came out. So I'm totally on board with that. I think that, I mean, it could be terrible for all we know in the end, but that's one of those things that's a hopeful thing in the future that I'm happy to see. Because at the moment, not much on the horizon that looks, you know, is making me think, yes, I must see this movie. The only thing is Maxine at the moment. That's the only movie that pops into my head that I'm really looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, I was trying to think earlier today, what films are there that I'm really looking forward to? And there's not many. I think I'm curious about Megalopolis.
That was a weird... Did you see the trailer for it? Or say trailer? Yeah, it was just a weird scene.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that tells me nothing.
I know, but I'm still kind of...
Time stoppages and New York.
I think it's because he's been trying to do it for so long, it makes me really curious. I'm like, he obviously really wants to make this goddamn thing.
Oh, man, he's been trying to get this
forever, right? Like the 80s, yeah. I think? Early 80s? Like,
yeah.
He's been trying for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, it says here, it was conceived in 1977.
Jesus.
But
yeah.
He's been actively developing it since 83. So yeah, early 80s is when he tried. So I'm like, I kind of I'm looking forward to it out of curiosity more than anything else. I mean, it's Francis Ford Coppola, so, you know.
Yeah.
He's a great director. We'll see. But that's probably the only one that I'm, like, kind of curious about, really.
Yeah.
There's no more, like, films coming out the rest of the year that I'm like, oh my god, I have to see.
Yeah. There's nothing that I can think of that's just, yep, nope. I'm totally on board with that. I need to see that.
I'm sure something will come along, but for now,
hopefully, hopefully that, you know, something will turn up that, you know, wows us.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, there's a new Cage one that I've heard good things about. I don't remember what it's called. It's I think it's like an alien invasion movie. It's like him and his sons and an alien invasion sort of thing.
Right.
Arcadian.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So there's that sounds pretty good. I think that's, I don't know when that's coming out, whether it's already out. I'm not sure. There's that. But yeah, there's not a lot grabbing my attention at the moment.
No. But I guess we'll see how the rest of the year pans out.
Mm-hmm.
I know what we're doing next time.
Yep.
It is Mad Max.
It is. Max.
Very much looking forward to reviewing that next week. But until then, stay safe. Take care. I recommend Dune Part 2. And I definitely recommend Late Night with the Devil too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of recommend all the movies we've seen this week to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on your love.
Cool. Well, we'll be back next week with our review deep dive of Mad Max. But until then, stay safe, take care, and we'll catch you next time.